never settle, unless it's into the electrifying BMW i4. Blend the lines of cutting-edge and classic with groundbreaking technology at your fingertips and experience M-engineered precision while you twist around every turn. After all, electric doesn't have to be static. If you thought EVs couldn't live up to your expectations, then you've never experienced the ultimate electric driving machine. The 100% electric 2025 BMW i4.
Hurry into the BMW President's Day sales event and receive exceptional offers through March 2nd.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
The bullying never happened? A bombshell story that rocked the sports world and the National Football League years and years ago is now coming to light. Good morning, Metroplex. The entire crew back together again. I'm Sean Sharif alongside RJ Choppy. My phone blew up after the eulogy segment with mostly praise, except for my brother. You guys are sick. Hey, that's what we do, man. We're a radio medium. Bobby recording the audio. My mom said that was a fantastic speech.
Oh, thank you.
John Ramsey sang. Awesome. Emilio sang. That was good and everything, but ask Choppy about the flowers on Valentine's Day. I saw the clip. That was great. The best part of the clip is you looking at the clock.
Is she awake?
That was the best. A little side head, side eye towards the clock. But you know what? Your fiance would be happy about that. If you went and got a $120 bouquet of flowers, she would have slapped you and she would have countered with, why don't you just take some from your dad's funeral? Why don't you just?
She would have suggested it.
She would have suggested it.
I can assure you, she was not happy about that.
Oh, okay.
And even less happy that I said it on the radio.
Well, my wife, I got an earful to the people we went to Cabo with over the things that I say as well. Mm. The Super Bowl toilet clogging story did not land well. But I said, you know, the big misnomer about calling out your other half for clogging the toilet, it's not what came out of your body.
It's a toilet paper issue.
It's the toilet paper. So I'm like, hey, sweet, it could have been a pee reaction. You know what I mean? It's not, oh my gosh, this girl just eats beans all day long. No, it's the toilet paper. People don't think of it like that.
Did you tell her what she was complaining? Did you say, isn't it nice to be able to complain about this in Cabo, though?
That's right. No, that's
these stories got you to Cabo, lady. You need to chill out.
That's what I always tell people, and I told the whole group. I was like, it's not my fault that I have a mic and you don't. That's the power I hold over everyone's heads. One of the girls there, she canceled her Christmas cards because back in Maryland she would write out these very intricate rhymey Christmas cards, and I read it on the air to make fun of her. She stopped writing them.
Oh,
she never forgiven me for that.
See, that's perfect. That's what you want.
You saved
want,
her.
You want people to guilt you out of doing things.
Yeah,
that's the key.
Well, speaking of guilt, Richie Incognito and Jonathan Martin.
According to a report, a big not a report.
According,
a
story, to Jonathan
according to
Jonathan himself.
According to Jonathan Martin, what's your source? Me. Literally me. He admits that Bullygate was built on a lie. And this is from, he was like, I never.
Now reset what this was.
Okay, so this was.
A lot of people listening probably has no idea who Jonathan Martin is.
Jonathan Martin was a young football player. Offensive line, Richie Incognito was his teammate. They both played for the Miami Dolphins.
And Richie was known as like an all-time bully, bad guy in the National Football League.
Yeah.
In terms of like playing dirty, guys like John Gruden absolutely loved
him. Yeah, and he was also, but Richie was also tasked with, hey, pull him under your wing and toughen him up. Like he was directed by the Dolphins to show him some tough love, but also be big brother to him a little bit.
Now, two other offensive linemen were also caught up in this, Mike Pouncey and John Jerry. But this was called Bullygate, and this happened back, you know, in 2013. And Richie Incognito was suspended for half of the season in 2013 and did not play at all in 2014 because no team wanted to touch him. He ended up being completely out of football in 2015. And look, Jonathan Martin says in this story, quote, "I never believed for a second I was being bullied. It's a story I've been trying to fix for 10 years.
Mm.
And I guess how it started was his mother started perpetrating this lie or this story that he was being bullied, I guess kind of to take some of the heat off him.
Yeah, I don't know that it's a lie as much as her interpretation of what she saw.
Yeah.
And so it was more just she was defensive mama bear, like, I'm going in here and I'm going to handle this for my baby because he's not going to stand up for himself, so I'm going to stand up for him.
Richie tweets, "He couldn't cut it in the NFL, so he quit, and his mom blamed me. Legacy Media pushed this narrative."
Legacy Media.
Legacy. What is Legacy Media?
Great question.
Yeah. I know who he voted for.
they're no longer on a plane, okay?
Your mom just bought an Incognito jersey.
Yes, she did. I know who didn't, but I won't say his name. Too bad it was all a lie. Too bad it was all a lie. They lied to protect his money. He quit. The team had every right to claw back that money. His mom started the bullying narrative with ESPN, Adam Schefter, so that Miami would not go after his signing bonus. So that was the first text or tweet by Richie. Then the next one. "It was wild to read the Wells report. A bunch of lawyers came in and tried to understand the culture of the NFL and the locker room. They made a mountain out of a molehill of being directed by Martin's parents. The report crushed us both. The lawyers wanted to protect the league and the Dolphins. They didn't give two S's to fact check any of the claims made by his camp. They took everything I said and used it against me. I was trying to tell the truth. Independent investigation. My foot." That's the thing. The Wells report.
Yeah, I forgot there was a Wells. How many reports has Ted Wells done?
I know, right? Well, he did this. He did the Brady one.
This is 144
pages. 144
pages
off of a single accusation. That's a lot to get off of an accusation. Off of one, not like a dozen. And, you know, now here we are. Richie lost a year and a half of his playing career and $10 million of income, which I don't know. Like, now that this comes out as being a lie,
according to Jonathan, which is a very key part.
Which, yeah. When you read back when they released every single text message between him and Richie, there was a lot of bullying stuff, but there was also like, "Hey, brother, do you need somebody to talk?" Like, Richie, what? Like, Richie did seem to show that he was.
It's like RJ in a funeral speech. Like, you know, he loves you, but if you listen to the words, it doesn't seem like it.
It's like when I walk in there yeah, and I go into...
That's for sure.
I've walked in there twice this morning to the production studio and said, "Hey, BA," to Peyton. That's what I've addressed him as twice this morning already.
Yeah.
But I love Peyton, sort of.
Like, there's things in, you know, the text messages or the voicemail, like, "I'm going to slap the crap out of you. You're still an effing rookie."
Yeah.
If you just judge that and isolate it, but then there's pictures, and a lot of people think that Richie Incognito was like bipolar. Yeah. And Incognito would have, you know, they both have drinks in their hands with Richie's arm around him and then checking up on him. "Hey, are you okay? We missed you for this win. As long as you're okay, that's all that matters." So there's two sides.
So one thing that, and Mike Florio writes about this, and he said a couple of things. He kind of takes both sides, which
Florio's getting destroyed as well because I guess he was a loud reporter in this, and if you know Florio, he's going to kill Richie Incognito, and Incognito went after him yesterday.
Right, so Florio says that Martin's claims contain a nuance that is lost on many. It's one thing for Martin to say he never believed he was being bullied. It's another to ignore the various findings from the investigations that occurred at the time. That's fair. I have no problem with that. You know, that harassment, he also says that Incognito, and I think this is a really interesting situation. Incognito and others who were publicly chastised by the Wells report fell victim to the same mindset that fueled the punishments meted out a year earlier in the Saints bullying scandal. Rather than admit a significant cultural problem within the locker room needs to be addressed, the NFL grabbed a piece of low-hanging fruit, squished it, and hoped the outcome would scare everyone else straight. And let's not forget the very real possibility that the Wells report had a preordained conclusion. The Wells report on Deflategate, a little more than a year later, supports a reasonable conclusion that the investigation started with the league's preferred outcome and worked backwards. And that's huge for the league. Like, bad for the league.
Now Richie could sue them.
Absolutely. Like, if Richie sits there and he's basically saying that, like, the NFL knew it had a bullying problem. It found a fall guy who everybody hated anyway, Richie Incognito, and said, let's put an end to bullying around the league by basically ending this guy's career.
Yep.
Well, you cost him $10 million. Now you're getting sued. Now, for the NFL, $10 million 10 years later is nothing.
Yeah.
Oh, but I mean, still,
they're going to fight it.
They don't take losses in court. Like, I mean, I can't.
They'll settle out of court.
But I don't think they will. That's one of their things. They are very big on you kiss the ring. That's what you do. This is.
So, look, let's get to the heart of the matter. Do we all now view Richie Incognito here as the absolute victim and he was done all time wrong? Bobby?
Easy answer, yes. A little more nuanced. I think what was a ball-busting relationship where maybe somebody was a little more sensitive to it than the other person recognized was blown out of proportion for the most part.
I agree. Richie is not a victim in life. Like, you could be like a murderer and get your house robbed. You're a victim in the house robbing.
Right.
You're still a murderer.
Yeah.
Like, Richie's a victim in this situation. He's still an all-time jackass.
I don't know.
You know what I mean? Like, he is. Like,
no, I think generally, like, what we found out about Richie is he was bipolar. Like, I mean, there was a lot of that. He had to take medication for he stabilized a lot in the back half of his career when he got on different medications and stuff.
In this case, he was wrong. He was done wrong here. I support ball busting. I don't consider, like, I've got a different threshold of what a bully is.
Ted Wells would destroy this show if he saw us behind the scenes.
Yeah, right. I know, right? Yeah, like, you know, when we grew up, like, words were not bullying. Words are bullying now.
Yeah,
and it's just a different. Like, I don't. If somebody makes fun of me, I don't consider it me. I'm being bullied.
I also question Jonathan Martin 10 years later versus in the moment. I don't know if Jonathan Martin, like, I think over time you may be thinking to yourself, I don't want to be remembered as an all-time wuss. I don't want to be remembered as an all-time baby. And it's better for me to come out now and say, no, it never happened, in order to get that off of his conscience. Or now you're going to be called an all-time liar by many people. But in the moment, he's making it seem like he just stayed quiet and his mom led the rampage and the attack. I don't know. We can't say for sure how Jonathan Martin totally felt in the moment. You can only rely on him. And Richie Incognito now has his star witness if he wants to go after the league.
So he said in this interview he gave to ESPN, he said, I hadn't expressed this to a coach or anyone yet, like said anything to anybody. And all of a sudden there's a report on ESPN I'm reading about it. And he's like, by that point, when my mom had already gone and talked to the ESPN and they had raised hell, well, now I'm just kind of stuck and I don't really know what to do and I don't know how to say, nope, false alarm, guys. Like, I could see that being a situation where if you're a little frustrated or maybe you're a little sensitive and you complained about it to your parents, that when it gets blown up, you feel a little bit like, I don't know how to handle this now.
And he's dealt with his own mental health issues over the years. He supposedly has rehabbed his life. He's a Bitcoin expert and he's been hospitalized for depression a few times. And now coming out with this, that Bullygate was a hoax and did not actually happen. Will this help the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim, whatever the hell they're called now, Ron Washington and Mike Trout, who's making a position change?
Yeah, he is. He is moving off of center field and moving to right field to, quote, take the load off. Take the load off.
Like Mike Bassick. Take the load off, baby.
And now, look, the Angels don't need him to play center field every day to suck at baseball. They'll still finish in last place. He could play anywhere on the field or not play, and they're still going to finish in just about last place.
He's missed 41% of their games.
My question is, if you're worried about, if you want to really do this and, like, preserve him, just DH him.
That's what I was thinking.
Just DH him, man.
He's 33. Why even have him in right?
What are you doing?
He's good enough and great enough that you don't need him defensively.
You could find a right fielder. Your team stinks. You can find somebody to play right field that's gonna suck.
Isn't it like playing for like a run first football coach though, or whatever, who like Yeah, but I still got a lot of emphasis on the run game, right? Like the where Ron Washington is, he loves defense too. Like, okay. So is Ron Washington going to be convinced to? Well, I don't want to take that glove away. I need that.
Fine, then miss him. Then yeah. Miss all of sure. The bats when he gets hurt.
Yeah,
yeah. This is a guy who had no problem putting Nelson Cruz in right field.
Yeah,
I mean, like you can handle Mike Trout as a DH. You don't need him out there.
He's made some poor right field decisions before. You're right.
He's played only 266 of 648 possible regular season games the last 4 years. So he's played in 41% of them.
And he's getting $35-40 million a year. Just DH him, dude. Like, yep. If you want to have this guy play 140 games, the only chance he does is if he's the DH.
I'll be honest. Even if he plays DH, I think he probably plays like 100 games.
Yeah, I think you're right. Gets hurt. I think you're right. But still, I think he's got a better chance of playing 100. Sure.
The radio station, Jared Sandler's already there, but the rest of the crew is going to be joining him next week in Surprise, Arizona. Double coverage. I think the first time ever done in DFW sports history. We'll be at the Combine in Indianapolis to cover the NFL, and the other shows are going to be in Surprise for Rangers spring training here on 105.3 The Fan. Bobby Belt has done a deep dive. He's been tweeting out some excerpts, and you're going to get part one, the new Cowboys head coach and the much-discussed C-word. And you, in case you've ever thought about just quitting reading like RJ and I, audiobooks could be where it's at. Bobby Bell takes you through it in the commercial-free expressway. Can Brian Schottenheimer really fix the culture? Commercial-free next. A project that only Bobby Belt could execute on the home of the Dallas Cowboys. Sean, RJ, and Bobby back together again with Peyton.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between, because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
This President's Day, upgrade the look of your home without breaking your budget. Save up to 40% site-wide on brand new window treatments now at Blinds.com. Blinds.com, the number one online retailer of custom window treatments, is the better way to give your home the presidential treatment. Blinds.com makes it easy with free virtual consultations on your schedule and samples delivered directly to your door, fast and free. Choose from trending woven wood shades or upgrade to motorized. Blinds.com has everything and more, all with upfront pricing and no hidden fees. Need help with installation? Blinds.com can handle it for you. Or DIY with expert guidance from our design pros. With over 25 million windows covered and our 100% satisfaction guarantee, you can count on Blinds.com to deliver results you'll love. Shop Blinds.com's President's Day Mega Sale Last Chance right now and save up to 40% site-wide, plus a free professional measure. Up to 40% off site-wide at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
When you get a cancer diagnosis, your world stops. But not Fox Chase Cancer Center. When the science moves quickly, we move quicker. Because cancer is all we do. From the molecular level to the human level, we stay focused on your unique cancer. Not just following the science, but discovering new paths forward. Giving you a head start on better outcomes. Learn more at foxchase.org/where you start. Because where you start matters.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Philip Russell, live on the Fan Camp Twitch and YouTube. We'll ask Reddit coming up at 7:40 as we go commercial free. Hit us up. Hit us up with it, Bob.
Yeah, so this is one of my favorite books. I mentioned this when they hired Brian Schottenheimer. One of my favorite books I've ever read. In fact, it's my favorite book about football that I've ever read. And it's called Collision Low Crossers. And it was a book by Nicholas Davidoff. And he is a... He was briefly a writer covering baseball for Sports Illustrated in the late 80s. But for the most part, he's just been like a long-form writer for The New Yorker and writes books about, you know, like he hosts a podcast about poetry and stuff. Like this is, he knew nothing about football when he had it suggested to him, like, you're just such a good writer. You should go in there as somebody who doesn't know football, sit down with the 2011 Jets, who are supposed to be... Like, man, they've been so close these last 2 years. They might win a Super Bowl. How cool would it be to cover that from start to finish? So he got embedded with the Jets in 2011, which was, of course, Brian Schottenheimer's last year with the Jets. And everything kind of went sideways for New York that year. And it ended up being a really compelling story for, like, the wrong reasons and for covering how a lot of different things went. So I was listening back to the audiobook on my trip back to Dallas from Houston and then driving back to Houston overnight. And I've continued to listen through it. Refresh myself on it a little bit. And I think there are just some interesting takeaways for what we might be able to learn about Brian Schottenheimer and how he'll operate here in Dallas, and maybe find out some of the things that he's probably learned from how things collapsed with the Jets. He talked during his opening press conference about how important he felt it was to work with the defensive side of the ball the first year that he was here. And I think when we listen through this audio right here, this first one that we're going to go through, you're going to see that when Rex Ryan was in charge of the Jets, it was very combative between the offense and the defense. It was almost like you had two football teams. They were...
Not surprising with Rex.
I think he wants that.
Buddy.
Yeah.
Right? Did the Bears offense... You know, the Bears defense hate the Bears offense back in Buddy
Ryan. Remember, Buddy Ryan and Mike Ditka were carried off separately from the field when they won the Super Bowl because they were two different teams.
Did Buddy punch his... offensive
Kevin Gilbride?
Yeah.
Was that Kevin Gilbride? Yep.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's he had created a combative culture that, like, to the point where Nicholas Davidoff said he spent most of the time sitting with the Jets defense. The 1 week he went over to the offensive side of the ball, the defensive coaches were like, you trade, are you going to tell them what we're doing over here? Like, genuinely mad. Like, these were trade secrets. They weren't telling each other anything within the building about how they operated. That's how much the lines have been drawn. But... there are a couple clips here that I think are really interesting to show. And so this is from the audiobook. So it's the narration of the book itself rather than just reading the passages.
Narrator. Oh, voice narrator guy.
Like, you're getting paid just to read the book.
People thought this was AI when I posted a clip of it, though. They're like, that was AI, right? I was like, no, this is an actual actor who's been on like 24 and stuff.
This is a person doing it.
Yeah. I don't remember his name.
How do you suggest I've never listened to an audiobook from start to finish. How do you compare that to reading it?
I'm definitely more auditory, so I feel like I get more out of it. I can hear the story and it lands with me more, because I will do the bit of like, I'm reading and I get to the end of the page and what the hell did I just read? I don't remember any of
this. Reread it.
Yeah, and so I'm more auditory, so I really like it. It's helpful for me. But this is the first story that kind of shows how lines were drawn. This is just a little side note. After the 2011 draft, they were calling undrafted free agents. Dennis Thurman, the old Cowboys defensive back, he was on the staff there, and they were calling trying to pitch players. And Rex Ryan was getting on the phone and he was telling players about why things were different with the Jets culture compared to anywhere else.
DT was talking with Julian Posey, the Ohio University cornerback. Ryan took the phone from DT midstream and introduced himself to Posey. Do you know who we drafted? We took a receiver from Colorado. He's the childhood best friend of our quarterback. My quarterback wanted him. I said, okay, we do the right thing by our players. Every player Ryan spoke with, he told about Scotty McKnight. The players he knew had all heard about the cruel, impersonal NFL. Here was proof that in Florham Park, things weren't that way.
So Rex Ryan, defensive guy, but talking about, hey, I did a solid for the offense, yeah, and I did a solid for my guys here, and I did this. This turned out, for Brian Schottenheimer at least, to be a massive negative, that he had drafted Scotty McKnight, and it caused tension between Schottenheimer and Mark Sanchez.
The players couldn't see them, but from time to time there were front office people and coaches watching from behind the second floor curtains. In Terry Bradway's office, he and Schottenheimer spectated as Greg McElroy completed a pass to the free agent swingman Josh Baker. "I'd give anything to be the worst guy out there," said Bradway, not Schottenheimer. He felt born to coach. In any case, something he'd noticed had been nagging at him. The way Sanchez seemed to be redesigning playbook routes to get the ball to McKnight, as though the two of them were back in sixth grade. When he and the other offensive coaches watched film, only one subject seemed to try the coordinator's patience while watching film: the presence of Scotty McKnight. "Amazing Mark didn't throw to Scotty here," Schottenheimer would say. "He always throws to Scotty when Scotty's in." Sanchez, susceptible to distraction, was very different from Schottenheimer. At times, Sanchez's optimistic nature seemed to try the coordinator. When plays broke down, Sanchez sought to find something redeeming, whereas Schottenheimer, mindful that Manning, Brady, and Drew Brees never took kindly to failure, would have preferred his quarterback to be more brusque in holding others accountable.
Mm. And when we talk about culture and discipline and things like that, that's a tension point you hear exists here. It's like, Mark, I'm glad you're positive, but like, let's actually worry about fixing what went wrong.
Yeah.
And that he would get a little frustrated with him. They were watching tape. There's a section that's talking about they were watching tape of the Cowboys leading up to the season opener in 2011, where they played Dallas on 9/11. And while they were watching film, he's making a comment about Romo. And he says, Mark Sanchez says, "Nice hand warmer there, dude. It's August. What are you doing?" Like, while they're watching tape. And Schottenheimer says, "It's nice to know you're focused on the things you should be. What was the coverage, Mark?" And Mark's like, "Three deep." He's like, "All right, you were right that time, but you need to be paying attention." So they clearly had some tension. And that selection by Rex Ryan, which he just thought, "Oh, I'll just make a solid for the offense," actually turned out for Schottenheimer to be like, "Dude, you can't do this."
Yeah.
And this is causing problems, and he's redesigning routes, and there's tension here now. So this is cut three
now. You remember Scotty McKnight? You knew those Jet teams well.
I don't remember Scotty McKnight.
Seventh rounder. He was there for a year before Schottenheimer got him cut.
I have one issue with that, with what that last cut was. It seemed that he had a problem with, like, the quarterback redesigning something.
He had a problem with specifically, "I'm going to get the ball to Scotty McKnight. I'm going to change the progression just to get it to Scotty."
Okay. I get that, but you cannot be rigid in football. You have to allow for a flow, and you know what I mean. Like you've got to allow you. I hate these coaches who it's my playbook and you're not going to touch my playbook.
I don't think that's it at all.
Sounds to me.
I mean, if Schottenheimer's saying literally every time Scotty McKnight got in the lineup, he was throwing to Scotty McKnight, that means he's not running the offense.
No, that's a problem. Yeah,
that means he's helping his buddy out. Mark Sanchez sounds completely in the wrong there more than Schottenheimer.
I don't want to force feed, but you got to allow the quarterback.
Especially the seventh rounder who didn't play a game. He was a practice squad guy most of the time. This is cut three here. Rex Ryan tried to reach over to the other side of the hallway, tried to be more active, tried to have a hand in offense because he knew that's, and I can't remember if this is including the part, he knew that's why he didn't get the Ravens job. The Ravens were never interested in hiring him, allegedly, because within this book, it says the Ravens knew he was so defensive focused that they didn't trust he could manage an entire roster.
Mm.
And so Rex Ryan tried to be better and bring juice to the offense, but ultimately just felt out of place.
Ryan believed that to the offense, he could offer my presence, could engender a joyful team-wide sense of purpose, toughness, and physicality. And yet, it was now 2 years into the Ryan administration, and much as offensive coaches Callahan, Devlin, Matt Cavanaugh, Aylin, and Schottenheimer liked working for Ryan, the head coach himself admitted that he was uncomfortable with the offense because they're different. Feeling not a part of things in the offensive meetings, he retreated, ceding everything to Shoddy. And by giving Shoddy the room, Ryan gave himself license to feel the old pride in the defense he had created. During training camp, he'd walk into Pettine's office and tell him, "I think we gave up a first down today." Watching film one day after another defensive pummeling, he mused, "We should probably give the defense a day off tomorrow." "Because the offense took off one today?" Sutton asked. "Imagine if this happened to us," said Pettine. "We'd be here until 2 in the morning," Ryan said.
And that's the thing. There's an animosity that built up that when you start hearing about that and go, all right, why didn't Ryan Schottenheimer succeed with the Jets? There's clearly tension that exists between defense, offense, and this is the line. And I'm going to meddle a little bit. I'm going to put this person over here. I'm going to do this as Rex Ryan would do. And then he would back off because he's like, well, I don't feel comfortable here. So he'd go in there, mix some stuff up, and then walk away.
Yeah, but it sounded like he gave Brian Schottenheimer total full autonomy. Yeah,
by the end in 2011, which was middle, I think it was middle of September is when they're talking about this, that he retreated. So it's like the last year where things had kind of fallen apart. But the defense still always gave feedback. And we're talking about this book, Collision Low Crossers, which covered the 2011 Jets. Big section here about Brian Schottenheimer and how things fell apart for him with New York. But this is cut four here. Talks about how the defensive coaches became really bitter towards Brian Schottenheimer because they felt like he held them back.
On the Jets, where the defense was not only tough but original, there was the growing feeling that Schottenheimer and his offensive players were holding the team back from winning a championship. In 2010, the Jets had begun their season with a game against the Ravens and lost 10-9. The Jets' offense was 1-for-11 on third down and secured a franchise-low 6 first downs. The game had been personal to the former Ravens coaches on the defense, and before it, they had given Schottenheimer many suggestions regarding the Ravens players they used to coach. None were taken. Afterward, Pettine was so upset he could barely speak. "We knew them," he kept repeating.
That's the thing. There was a... when you listen to Schottenheimer talk about specifically how he worked with Quinn, that sounds like it changed his perception a lot. That it changed his entire... He gave it I can't remember if it was in the press conference or it was the interview after he gave to Nick Eatman. But he had talked specifically about when he worked with Quinn and he got to work with defensive players consistently and see how defensive minds think, it changed a lot of his perspective and opened up his mind to, all right, I see this now. Because they had talked about Bill Callahan's got a quote in this book where he says, we're the ones who have to be precise on offense. All 11 guys have to be doing their job. If one of them doesn't do it, it flubs up. Over there on defense, you could have 10 guys doing the wrong thing, and if one dude is a superstar and just is able to run to the ball and hawk the ball, then he can save the play for you. We can't do that.
So I was looking at this roster, because I remember this Jets offense as being terrible, and in order to indict or judge Schottenheimer negatively, I had to know the talent in the roster. LaDainian Tomlinson.
Yeah, the roster was okay. It was the quarterback that was the issue.
Braylon Edwards. Santonio Holmes had 35 catches that year. Dustin Keller, remember the tight end? Jericho Cotri, 27 catches. And Sean Green, Joe McKnight, Tony Richardson. These are some of the names on the Jets
Joe
offense.
Joe McKnight, by the way.
USC?
That is a little note here in this book, which has nothing to do with Schottenheimer, but is fascinating. It talks about how Joe McKnight was respected by everybody because that dude had night terrors every night, would wake up screaming because he had grown up in Katrina. And so he used to wake up. He said he had night terrors every night of imagining he was back in the flooding waters.
Oh my God.
And like, so everybody in the Jets building had massive respect for like that. The fact that dude is able to get on the field every week is impressive to us.
Yeah. Like that in 2011, they had gotten pretty bad. Like that was the same team that went to like the same offense that went to the conference championship games.
13-6. They finished in 2010.
Yeah. I mean, and it was the same guys. They just got older, and you know Sanchez just wasn't good. But they were older, but there were some names.
Now, Mike Pettine was the defensive coordinator there. They've referenced him a couple different times now, and Pettine specifically was like, "We knew Baltimore just like they played in that club. We knew Baltimore really well. We gave these suggestions. They weren't taken." So they asked Pettine specifically. They're like, "All right, so what's your opinion on Schottenheimer then? Because I mean, he's really bright. Everybody sees this, and we'll get into some different cuts later of just how football obsessed and insane Brian Schottenheimer is in terms of his intelligence level." But they were talking to Pettine and saying, what does he need? And it sounds like from the description of Pettine that he felt like if he was Rex Ryan, he'd be doing some more as a head coach to help Brian Schottenheimer, but that Pettine wasn't going to do that himself as a defensive coordinator.
The defense's superior attitude, Pettine knew, chapped some asses across the hall. But this was the way football teams worked. It was an emotional, aggressive business, and if Pettine gave too much quarter, his defense would slip. He liked Schottenheimer, considered him a great, great guy, and he knew that with a young, erratic quarterback and such an accomplished defense, Schottie's in a tough spot. If Pettine had been the head coach, he might have sought Shoddy out, tried to help. Pettine hoped someday to be a head coach. But now he was the defensive coordinator, and I never want to farm somebody else's hand. That's how you get in trouble.
It's something where that whole, it sounds
kind of like the Schottenheimer-McCarthy meetings with Jerry.
Honestly, and I think that's the thing. I think that there's so much that it sounds like to me, based on what we've heard from Stops in Seattle, his time here in Dallas already, it sounds like Schottenheimer learned a lot from how that fell apart. And when you listen to the whole audiobook, I was reading a review of it. I can't remember who it was. It was an NFL blog had written a review of this book way back in the day. And I agree with the take. It said something effective. You come away from the book with the sense that Schottenheimer was kind of the stabilizing factor a lot of times culturally. Like Rex Ryan was just free. Let's do this. Let's do it, guys. Let's have fun. Let's do it. And Schottenheimer was the guy who was like, all right, but we got to have some discipline here. But he felt a little undermined as, even though I'm in charge of the offense, we've split up this entire football team, basically, and the head coach ignores our side of the ball, and the head coach is just, let's go draft a guy in the seventh round because he's best friends with the quarterback. A quarterback who Schottenheimer clearly, and we'll play some more clips of this, like I said, later, the lack of trust Schottenheimer had in Sanchez was unreal. I mean, just doing everything he could to draw plays for, and this tells me, by the way, that Schottenheimer would have been in favor of giving Trey Lance more packages than McCarthy did, because it talks there about how much, all right, I got to get packages for Leon Washington at quarterback, Brad Smith, Jeremy Curley.
Leon Washington.
I've got to create all these different packages because our quarterback isn't accurate and he throws too many interceptions. Like, there's nothing I can do to manufacture points other than do this. And Schottenheimer talks a lot about, I want to get the ball in my playmaker's hands and just see if they can do something, especially if the quarterback is going to give me trouble. But as you can hear, their culture is a big part of what Schottenheimer's talked about since he got here. And it's clear, like, what was going on with the Jets, the culture was very divided.
Well done. Part one, Bobby Roberto Belt with the... Oh, I can't believe that guy is not AI. I can't believe that's an actual
sounds like he is.
Person. More Brian Schottenheimer audio book review to come today and throughout the week here on your official home of the Dallas Cowboys. It's also your home of Brian Broaddus' favorite segment of the show.
Do you have a question, Kelly?
Yeah, I have a lot of questions. Number one, how dare you?
That's right. It is Tuesday at 7:40. That means it's time for Ask Reddit, where we ask the most viral questions being asked over on Ask Reddit over the last week, the 50 million member forum, where they come up with all sorts of hypotheticals and, you know, brain busters and things like that. And we kick them around with you guys on the Frankel and Frankel Injury Attorneys fan text, 877-881-1053, 877-881-1053. You can also weigh in on the Twitch and the YouTube. We'll kick things off with this question for Peyton Russell.
All right.
Because I know Peyton Russell had to ask me for clarity on what this question meant. So he's had 2 hours to come up with an answer. So if you don't have one now. Are you being serious?
No, I'm serious.
Okay, good. All right. Peyton Russell, what is your serial killer trait that hypothetically would make everyone say, yeah, we should have known?
So this one, I hate to admit it, but when I'm eating a bag of chips, I'm the guy, like out of the pantry, I'm the guy that eats the chips, licks the fingers, puts my hand back in the chips, and then I put the bag of chips back in the pantry. Awful, hate to admit it. Hopefully I can finish the bag off, but...
It's your house, who cares?
No, yeah. Well, that's gross, dude. Do you do that?
Wait, you're saying you eat the chips... You lick your fingers.
Put my hand back in the chips, eat more, and then I put the bag that I haven't finished back
in the
pantry.
You're okay with that?
I don't do it, but, like, it's his house. It's him or Mackenzie. But I'm sure they French kiss each other.
But if a guest comes over there...
That'd be bad.
Yeah, you want some chips?
That'd be disgusting.
That's okay. Disgusting. Mine is obvious. It's the one that everybody's always gotten after before. The crazy psychopath trait of mine is... out of many, is the one that I can't do the shower within 2 hours of using the bathroom. That's the one that whenever I tell anybody that, they're like, you have mental problems.
No, your weirdest one, that's weird, but the one no one knows about is what you do with this door every day.
Oh, yeah.
That's psychotic. So anytime that door is open, our studio door, RJ could go get a drink of water. He's going to be back in 10 seconds. Bobby has to walk over and close the door.
He does.
And it makes it appear, if you don't know him, it makes it appear like he's having all these secret conversations and meetings about you. Like he's waiting to stab you right in the back. Like, I'm going to the bathroom. If I walk to the other room even shorter than a water trip and get a piece of paper off the printer, Bobby has to get, he senses the door open. He has to walk on over and close it. It physically bothers him if it's open.
It's an OCD thing.
Yeah. You know, I constantly repark. Like, I park, and I, like, it's got to be centered in the lines.
Yeah.
Now, here, I don't really care at work for some reason, but, like, in general, and it annoys Sarah to no end because I'll park and I'll back up if it's not perfect. Or
you don't want to get hit by someone else. You don't want a door ram.
You know, I could generally find someone online in a matter of minutes. We did it on the airplane.
That was impressive.
You know, and you know, Peyton said with the chips, I do something that Sarah absolutely hates. She's got one of these flossers on a stick.
Oh yeah,
and I'll use her flosser. I don't care. Doesn't bother me. I'll just go in there and I'll floss.
She makes you rewash towels that land on the carpet.
Yeah.
And you just use her floss?
She's pretty gross.
Yeah, but she's not going to use it again.
Yeah, she'll use it. She uses the floss thing, but I still use it. She goes, I bought you your own. I'm like, yeah, no, I'm just waiting for this one to die.
The wiring?
When we use mine.
That would be gross, though, to look at any specks of food on the wire.
I rinse it off.
Oh, you rinse it off?
I rinse it off. It's because I'll get a big, giant piece of beef jerky on there. I got to rinse that thing off.
So rephrase the question.
What is your serial killer trait that hypothetically would make everyone say, yeah, we should have known?
I can't deal with the microwave like ever going to full zeros and ringing. I sprint over, like I make it a challenge in my mind that I have to multitask. I'm the most efficient microwave person that you've ever seen. I'm like, all right, can I put this on a minute 30, pee, and rush back? And if I save it, I feel like I'm saving the world from a bomb.
Cut the red wire.
I've cut the red wire. If I can lunge and make sure it stops at one versus like go off, I feel very, very accomplished throughout the day. So that's a very, I would say, weird trait.
No, that's a solid one. That's a serial killer trait for sure. We've all got them. I've got plenty of them. That's the thing, is that it's the door and it's everything else and all the other ways that
682 says they count steps whenever they walk up and down the stairs. They like count the steps as they're walking. I've done that a couple times, but
never done that.
Everybody would always avoid stepping on cracks like while walking. I would go out of my way to step on everyone.
Sure.
And they say you break your mother's back. I sent her to the grave, I guess, doing that because I stepped on everyone and then 16, she was gone. We were doing Ask Greta here on 105 Through the Fan.
Well, like you remote control people or the TV volume.
Volume's got to be on an even number.
My brother, same thing. That's psycho.
Yeah. That's
it'd bother them like, no, it's got to be one notch higher or one notch lower to be an even number.
Got to be even.
Sean Sharif, did your parents spank you as a form of discipline? How do you think it affected you?
No.
You never got spanked once?
I got chili pepper on the mouth once and locked in the bathroom.
What'd you say?
B word. to my mom. And we had all these peppers, and I think I was taking a bath as a little kid, and she walked on over and just rubbed it on my lip, walked out, and then it's a battle of wills.
Yeah.
It's like touching the stove. Sure. Am I going to... and then once you touch it, doesn't matter, you're in a bathtub because it's warm water. That's going to accelerate it even more, it feels like. But no, I got chased with a slipper once.
A slipper?
My dad, big slipper wearer.
I can respect that.
Yeah, a big sandal, big slipper wear.
I can respect that.
And yelled at him in front of like his brother, sister, like the cousins, and he chased me over to the apartment next door.
Oh man,
I know you got spanked because you just mentioned not often. You mentioned you made the mistake of telling once it didn't hurt.
It didn't hurt.
We had an agreement among my siblings. My mom would use like a plastic hanger. It didn't hurt at all because it was like what it like had give, like, you know, hangers, they have
the
that
wire,
like,
hangers really
wire
do.
Hanger would
yeah,
hurt
they really do,
but
yeah.
They would have that, they have this like give to it, so she would, and it would just like form around your butt and it wouldn't be a big deal, but
at least we had a full plastic one,
but we had to always sell it like, oh my gosh, this hurts, keep using this please. I did the same thing as you. I was running towards my brother. I was mad at him. I was probably 12 years old. And my mom was between us. And as I'm running towards him, I'm like, you. And I'm like, I've never cussed. I should see how this goes over. And I said, you B word. And as I'm charging, I get the word out. And I don't even get to my brother because I feel my mom's hand grab my arm. And in the same movement, she then smacked me right on the backside. And yeah, I got spanked. I don't think it messed me up, though.
I got spanked a few times. Not much.
How weird I would have been if I didn't get spanked.
Yeah. My grandmother hit me with a wooden spoon once. Nothing. You know, the nuns whacked you on the wrist.
Yeah.
You know, I'm toxic masculine. I don't believe in trauma.
Oh, my dad, he worked at a country music station.
Oh, well.
Around here. And he had a cutting board that was in the shape of an acoustic guitar that they had given him. And he used that on me once as like, all right, here you go. He's like, perfect handle, perfect size.
I whipped my brother. We were in a huge and a Dazed and Confused.
Oh, what a movie.
We all in high school
Mr. Nice Guy.
We all in high school like made paddles as seniors and took my brother out to the woods. That definitely traumatized him. No doubt, big time trauma. It wasn't like a full, like ridiculous, crazy. It was more to scare him, driving him out there. But no, not like full swing, but we all had those Dazed and Confused paddles.
That's awesome.
Peyton, yeah. How about you?
I was spanked. It was always if I talked back to my mom. You know, she wouldn't do anything at the moment, but she would say, I'm going to get your dad whenever he comes back home from work. And that made me really stop it. My mistake, though, when my dad was spanking me as a kid, I'd move out of the way. I just, like, a natural reaction. I'm trying to move out of the way to put my hands back there, and he'd restart the count. He said, nope, we're going to start back over. So if it was three spankings and I did it on the last one, he'd say, let's start back over. And, oh, worst mistake of my life.
And you kept that? Did you do that repeatedly?
Oh, I do. Just had a reaction. Just like, see, oh, because I was thinking that ways I could, okay, maybe it's not going to hurt as much if I move a little to the left or right and put my hand back there. But he cut on.
So. The worst, I gave it to Oliver, CPS on line one here in a second, or my mother-in-law. We were at a July 4th party. Oh, my God. Did he humiliate and embarrass us? He just wanted to stay in the house and play and not go out and watch the parade. And he was in such a rage. Like, I carried him out of the house and like, I'm looking to see if they have cameras, you know, outdoor. Yeah. And I'm sitting there trying to spank him in their driveway. And he was in such, he had already lost it to the degree that he was like hallucinating, crying. Mm-hmm. It did absolutely
doesn't
nothing.
Matter.
I put him in the car and we went home. Dead silence for like the next 2 hours in my house. As we're like, we have to get him evaluated. It was that serious. We were that worried. But, you know, he was fine. He's fine.
We've got a lot of people weighed in on the Fantex 361. Whipped with belts as a kid. Turned out fine, but won't do it to my kids. Got a lot of people on here who said they got spanked. Most common is, you got people who had to go cut down the switch. Do you ever have to do that? Go cut your switch? Ooh, I had to cut my switch down one time.
What?
Oh, yeah. That used to be the go cut the switch. And if it's not, you're going to get spanked with this. And then I'm going to go cut down the real size and spank you with it if you don't cut down what that's the right size.
Gosh.
Yeah, I got it bad. All right, we're doing Ask Greta here on 105 Through the Fan. RJ
Choppy.
That's
why you don't want a house because you don't want any trees. Those
exactly.
Like, accessible tree limbs.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the girls, you know, they're generally well-behaved, although Addison, we're having to deal with stuff now a little bit. All right, RJ Choppy, what is the first movie you remember watching in theaters?
I mean, I saw a lot more movies before this at theaters. I just don't remember. I have no visual memory of it. So the first one I remember is Forrest Gump.
Wow.
And I was like 15.
I was going to say, that's kind of
late. I absolutely saw many movies before. I just don't have any visual memory of it. And the only reason why I remember Forrest Gump is because my grandfather, who was in Pearl Harbor, he says he was in Pearl Harbor. Biggest lie perpetrator in America. He went there after. But he still said, I was in Pearl Harbor.
Who swift boated your grandpa? Who told him?
So
they had the flag of the service folded up at his casket the other day. And RJ's trying to bite his tongue.
He was in the war. But he was like a mechanic. So he went there after to fix a lot of the stuff. And but he was just joking, I was in Pearl Harbor. But he got up and left.
Thank you for your wrench.
Yeah. He got up and left.
Thank you for your service request.
He got up and left the theater during the combat scene. He was getting like PTSD or something during the Vietnam scene.
Damn.
Were they changing a tire?
Yeah. They might have been. I don't know. But yeah, that's the only reason why I remember it.
So it wasn't awkward for you when Grandpa was sitting next to you and Jenny just decided to go to town on Forrest? That wasn't a problem for you?
No, I didn't
care. I would think that'd be awkward. First movie for me, Three Ninjas. We got taken by our babysitter to see Three Ninjas in theaters, and she brought her boyfriend with her, and I remember having to interrupt them from making out to ask them if I could get some more popcorn. That's what really stands out to me on that one. Sean, first movie you remember seeing in theaters?
Three Musketeers.
Which
1993, I believe, because I looked it up, and it says there's a 2011. I was like, no, well before that. I remember For some reason, Three Musketeers jumping in my mind. 1993.
Oh, Chris O'Donnell. Oh, yeah. I've seen this one. I was trying to remember which one. Charlie Sheen, Kiefer Sutherland. Yeah, I've seen this one.
Elizabeth Slacom.
Was it an AMC theater?
I don't think so.
Peyton, what was the first movie you remember seeing theater? Have you ever seen a movie in theaters? It doesn't sound like you watched much.
Yeah, this is probably the first one I've ever seen.
Get ready how old we're about to feel here.
It's the one that I remember, though, because my dad would take me and my brothers to the movie theaters. It was out for a couple days. Star Wars Revenge of the Sith, 2005, I believe. Oh, yeah. I was that, because that was the first movie theater I remember, because it was so packed. So I really enjoyed doing that. Some of the fan techs on the Frankel Injury Attorney fan techs. Air Bud, The Goonies, Twister, a couple of them have seen that. So there's some answers there.
All right. We got time for probably one more here. Sean Sharif, what's an adult problem nobody prepared you for?
I was hoping you were going to ask this one.
You want me to ask another one?
Yeah. No. I'm not really blaming my parents for not preparing me, but I do feel like we never had like the taxes, adult paperwork discussions.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I have to ask Choppy all my, like, life, which I probably shouldn't. He hasn't gotten his tax return from 2 years ago. But
I blame the IRS on that one, not me.
Income tax, IRS, property tax, all these things. I never sat down. My dad would have been more than willing. He's brilliant with all that stuff. But I never had that true economics, adult business discussion with them.
Yeah. You know, my dad did a decent job of, like, you know, telling me, like, you know, you take this off, you know, it's a write-off. Everything's a write-off.
Everything's a write-off. Now, did you have to initiate it, or is he like, all right, sit down, son, we need to go over this stuff?
No, I would just watch. I would just follow and watch. Like, I did a lot of that by following and watching. This has nothing to do with anything. Like, this is more like they can warn you, but nobody, because you always hear people say, I'm getting old. Nobody can prepare you for, like, something always going wrong with your body. Like, your back hurts one day. The next day you wake up, it's like, why is my knee hurt? Then the next day you wake up, it's like, what's going on? My neck? Nobody can prepare you for that. It's every day, always something different.
I guess because they wanted to show stiff upper lip or whatever else with me, they never explained to me just how tired all adults are. Like, I had no idea they were as run down as they're. I never feel like I've gotten enough sleep, ever. I always feel tired.
That's what Amanda says to other expecting parents. That's the last day of good, great sleep you'll ever get.
Mine is a little different. Flushing a tank water heater, very specific here. I had one rust out on me last year. Had no idea that was a possibility. My parents, I've never seen them flush one out before. So flushing a tank water heater, still don't know how to do it. I've watched countless YouTube videos. Still don't know how to do it. Didn't know calcium could build up in it.
Yeah.
I was like, I don't know why.
I've never done that.
Ask Reddit every Tuesday during the commercial-free expressway here on DFW Sports Station. Are the Navy SEALs to blame for Luka Doncic getting traded? Next.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Ah, can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Kickstart your new year with a rewarding career at the HK Group. HK is the leader in heavy construction and contractor site materials with over 80 locations across Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and Delaware. HK offers a wide range of opportunities, including heavy equipment operators, CDL drivers, mechanics, site supervisors, engineers, and project managers. 100% paid benefits designed to promote healthy living, financial stability, and career growth. The HK Group does not discriminate. Apply today at hkgroup.com. It's your future opportunity.
If you have a locked AT&T phone, we're here with Bolt Cutters. T-Mobile will help pay off your locked phone and give you a new 5G phone for free, all on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom.
Via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax and a $10 device connection charge. Qualifying port and trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement as due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early.
Hey, I'm Josh Fink, owner of Nick's Menswear. Getting married? Don't rent some random suit. At Nick's, we help you own the look for about the same price as a rental. You're marrying the love of your life. Don't you deserve a suit that's yours forever? Nick's Menswear, your friend in style.